You're listening to the award-winning The PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, the third floor of the Cub. Reach us in the studio at 509-335-2207 on the website www.kzuu.org and at the show's website www.thepes.com. In the studio today, we have Tom Forbes, a returning guest, and we're going to talk all about sports, technology, and politics. Stay tuned.
Home and get a speeding ticket along the way. At my apartment, my neighbor hands me a beer to douse the flames, the cops show up, see me with a beer, and hand me an MIP. And now the landlord's on my case for the Christie curtains.
Oh, wow. Well, haven't you heard of Student Legal Services?
No, what's that?
They offer free legal advice for WSU students face-to-face with an attorney.
There's a lawyer on campus for students?
Yep, they're in Cub 316, or just call them. Their number is 509-335-9539. Interns are there from 9 to 5 Monday through Thursday, and from 9 to 1 on Fridays.
But I don't want everyone to know my problems.
Everything's confidential with Student Legal Services. And tell your friends, because they can help with other issues, too.
Oh, thank you, Ashley. You're my bestest friend ever.
Just remember, Student Legal Services is free!
KZUU offers free public service announcements like the ones you just heard. If you need to get the word out about your club or event, come by the KZUU office in Cub, room 311, and fill out a PSA form.
Been waiting all year for this to happen, and finally it is. The last episode of the Peter Eichmann Show, the PES, on KZUU 90.7 FM. In the studio, like I said, we have Tom Forbes. He's a town crier with the Pullman Moscow Daily News. He's also the main guy behind Palusistics. In my mind, I can pronounce that, but... which is a local blog, conservative blog, that a lot of the issues they've been talking about is Walmart, but I also talk about other current and local issues. There's accolades on there recently for the Pullman High School Greyhounds championship season. Some of the information about the recent double murder suicide and more. You check out that website at palousitics.blogspot.com. Or you could get to there from a link from our website, and that's www.thepes.com. How are you doing today, Tom? It's going to be a good day today, more or less free form. I'm going to let Tom pretty much choose all the topics we talk about today. Last time I sort of controlled it, this time he'll control it. I'll be the co-host, so to speak, and he'll be the head guy here. What also, before we get into all of Tom's stuff, I'd like to talk about Target again, and the idea of Christmas season, and you know, everybody's going out on Christmas break here. I'm sure most of the students are packing up, getting ready to head out of town if they haven't already, or they're finishing up their finals to head out for Christmas break. And once again, I heard the Wild Ivy, they had a nice commercial on about Christmas, and it was great. And I, last couple weeks, I've been railing on Target for the fact that not only did they not allow the Salvation Army in front of their store anymore, they are refusing to use the word Christmas in any of their displays, any of their ads, anything. It's, you know, I mean, they're just totally getting away from it. Well, the PES worked hard on Target over this, and they've changed their mind. I'd like to think it was all my doing.
I did see that, and yeah. I thought you should get the credit for that, Scotty.
I appreciate that. Yes, Target is now, they've done a 180. They are now using the word Merry Christmas in their commercials. They're going to actually start using the word Christmas again, so it's no longer the a four letter word to them. They'll be happy to use it. So I was really happy when I heard that, and I felt that as I railed on them for a couple weeks by not using it, I better give them the due credit once they started to decide to use it. And so as such, I'm going to say Target is now on one of my lists of places I will do shopping at again for Christmas money, because they obviously do want my Christmas money since they're willing to use the word Merry Christmas again.
Yeah, it's been very silly this holiday season, or Christmas season, excuse me. I get caught up in all the PC madness, but yeah, it's been real interesting to see what's been happening. Of course, I saw the news release where the AFA, which is a I think it's the Association or American Family Association or something like that, conservative family group, mm-hmm. had been calling for a boycott of Target, you know, because of their refusal to use Christmas in their advertisement. And I guess 700,000 people had actually signed up online to say that they were not going to shop at Target. So Target apparently was feeling the heat and said, oh, okay, well, the whole holiday thing, that was just to get started. But as we get closer to the actual holiday, we'll start using Christmas as part of our marketing. So it's like, okay. So that was some nice spinmanship. And then AFA said, okay, that's fine. You know, we'll drop our boycott. And I guess I was reading, now a search on the Target site brings up like 37,000 references to Christmas. So it's like,
wow.
Merry Christmas, Target. And of course, Walmart had kind of gotten hot water over the same thing. The Catholic League of America was really on them for their whole Home for the Holidays campaign that they were doing. And there had been some letter, I guess, from This almost sounds like an urban legend, but I guess it's true. There's someone that was in some sort of marketing or advertising department at Walmart had written some letter explaining the pagan origins of Christmas, and you know, so people got pretty offended at that, and so that guy, I guess, got canned from Walmart, and so now the Catholic League is happy again. So, you know, it seems kind of silly, and there's been a lot of editorials I've seen. You know, a lot of people are like, well, you know, the right and the conservatives are just making, you know, too much out of this issue, but I don't think so. I think all of us, I guess, like my age or even, you know, people that are not that old can remember back 10, 15, 20 years ago where Christmas really was used a lot more frequently in the media, advertisements. And, you know, one of the biggest indicators, I think, is, you know, it's kind of sad, and I won't name any names here, but, you know, my little girl, who's 2.5, is in daycare, you know, they don't really learn Christmas carols the way we used to learn them anymore, because they all have to be politically correct now. You know, she can learn Frosty the Snowman, but she can't learn Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer because it has the word Christmas in it. So,
well, I would almost look for a new daycare if they're going to be like that. I mean, it's like then one holiday,
right?
You know, Eve, Santa. I mean, come on.
It is. It's really ridiculous. And you know, and you can, like, when you go out in public, I guess, you know, thank gosh, what is it that there's that song like, it's the one that's like holiday, you know, Happy Holidays, I guess is the name of that. You know, that's like the new Christmas anthem. You don't hear Silent Night anymore or any of the other traditional religious carols. Like, if you're out in the mall or something like that, they don't play those old-fashioned carols that we grew up with that you know, actually mention, you know, Jesus and talk about Christmas and things like that. So, I mean, I personally don't think it's been overblown. I mean, I think there's been a distinct effort to sanitize Christmas, and I think that's wrong, because if that were applied in reverse to some other holiday that was significant to another group of people, then I think those people would be outrage, and justifiably so.
Let's take the military out of the 4th of July and the fireworks and the whole beginnings of the country because of all the terrible things that it means, and we'll just make 4th of July a big picnic.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
I think everyone's religious holidays should be respected. You know, I realize that not everyone, you know, celebrates Christmas. You know, I realize that we have a lot of people that may be Muslims or Jews or atheists or whatever, but, you know, the Jewish faith has holidays and the Muslim faith has holidays, and I think those should be respected. I'm all for that, and I think if people want to advertise, you know, for special events for those holidays, I think that's great. And I've always supported, you know, that if people want to have time off on those days, you know, that maybe not celebrate Christmas, but celebrate some other religious holiday, I think that should be supported too. I don't think, you know, we should get to the point where, you know, we're trying to mandate a non-religion, you know, by taking out any kind of religious holidays whatsoever from American life.
Yeah, the simple fact is, I thought it would be sort of interesting. I was thinking about this the other day. If you're a school teacher, like say an elementary school especially, where this would really work, is on the chalkboard or the whiteboard, write a big old Merry Christmas and have it up there, and wait till some kid goes home and tells his mom and dad complain and go to the school and you know, keep on forcing the issue. And essentially, what I would say is that the teachers should then argue that my First Amendment rights of the free practice of my religion are being infringed upon.
Sure.
And, you know, fight this all the way up and then get it to the point where, yeah, we do have to recognize it. Not only do people have, does the country not establish a religion, but you are given the right of the free exercise thereof. And having a school teacher write Merry Christmas on the board is not establishing a religion.
No. Because, you know, let's face it, I mean, at least for now anyway, the majority of people in America identify themselves as Christians. I believe it's around 80% is the numbers that I've seen. So for better or for worse, the majority of people in America are Christians. So I don't think there's anything wrong with writing Merry Christmas on the blackboard. Just as if you had Jewish students in the class, there wouldn't be anything wrong with writing Happy Hanukkah on the blackboard, or for Muslim students, I guess, what is it? Eid is the feast that follows Ramadan or something like that. You know, any of those holidays, if someone wants to write that on the blackboard, I wouldn't find that offensive. I mean, we talk about diversity all the time and celebrating diversity and practicing tolerance, but that doesn't seem to apply to religious holidays or particularly Christian religious holidays.
Not at all. So, anyway, getting back to Target, they are now fair game. Go ahead and go shopping there. Spend your Christmas money there and be happy that they're recognizing the fact that Christmas exists. And what kind of topics do you have for us today?
Well, one of the things I was wanting to talk about is, it's kind of interesting. I actually had written a letter to the editor that was published last week, I think, or maybe week before last. I forget.
Which newspaper?
In the Bosco Pullman Daily News.
Okay.
I guess it was last week, where it's been interesting to observe what's been going on with the anti-Walmart forces. You know, there's two primary groups nationally. There's WalmartWatch.com, and then there's WakeUpWalmart.com. And both of those organizations receive their money primarily from labor unions. In the case of Wake Up Walmart, it's the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, and they have really been mounting a very aggressive campaign against Walmart over the last, I'd say, month or two, and especially, I think, in concert with the Christmas season. They've tried to really ramp up the rhetoric, and in like the second week of November, I believe it was, Walmart Watch had what they called a Higher Expectations Week, and they staged, you know, thousands of events all over the country, and some of those events included screening of a new movie that's come out called Walmart: The High Cost of a Low Price, which, you know, has a lot of unflattering things to say about Walmart. And one thing I'll just say about that movie is, one of the things to remember is that the director of that movie, also, I don't know if anyone remembers, I'm old enough to remember, it was a really cheesy 80s movie called Xanadu that had Olivia Newton-John in it, and it was like probably on one of the top 10 lists of all-time worst movies, I think, for a lot of critics. He was the director of that. He also directed a movie called Portrait of a Stripper, and since his Hollywood career didn't work out too well, he decided to move into the documentary realm, and so now he's making these left-wing propaganda documentaries. But Anyway, part of the Higher Expectations Week was the screening of this film in thousands of places all over the country, including here in Pullman. There's actually been a couple of screenings of the movie here in Pullman, and there's been some screenings over in Moscow. So there's this movie that's out there, and there's all these other events and things that are going on. And I guess the latest thing now is Wake Up Walmart has a campaign where they have a letter that's been signed by 65 clerics stating or asking us to consider, would Jesus shop at Walmart? Well, besides the fact that that's incredibly sacrilegious to try to drag Jesus into the Walmart debate, it doesn't take more than a quick glance at the list of people that signed the letter to figure out what their agenda is. The very top signature on that letter is the Reverend Jesse Jackson. So I think that probably tells you all you need to know about all the other people that that signed the letter. So, but now they're trying to use religion as an argument to fight Walmart. So anyway, there's been this big furor over the last, oh, month, 2 months or so about Walmart nationally, like I said, leading up to Christmas. And what's happening is, I think it's really catching the attention of some people maybe that really weren't aware of what was going on, you know, with these organizations and the actual war that was being waged on Walmart. So there's been a lot of editorials, you know, like the Wall Street Journal had a very scathing editorial coming out against the critics of Walmart. There was an op-ed piece in the New York Times against them. The Washington Post, actually that editorial from the Washington Post was published in the Daily News last week, I think. So, and then there was a piece by Michael Medved in the Seattle Times, and so there's all these national papers that are starting to weigh in on the whole Walmart issue and taking exception with the critics. And what's really interesting is a paper that I have here in my hands from a guy by the name of Jason Furman, and it's called Walmart, a Progressive Success Story. And Jason is a visiting scholar at New York University's Wagner Graduate School of Public Service. And his conclusion that he reaches is, at worst, to the degree the anti-Walmart campaign slows or halts the spread of Walmart to new areas, it will lead to higher prices that disproportionately harm lower-income families. In the process, some of the campaign's rhetoric risks undermining public support for making work pay, and in particular for publicly provided health benefits for less skilled and less experienced workers who earn lower wages. A much better strategy would be to recognize that Walmart is a progressive success story. By acting in the interests of its shareholders, Walmart has innovated and expanded competition, resulting in huge benefits for the American middle class and even proportionally larger benefits for moderate-income Americans. Now, the interesting thing about this paper and Jason Furman is that Jason Furman was the director of economic policy for the Kerry Edwards campaign. So we're not talking about a conservative Republican here that's defending Walmart. You know, this is a guy who is identified as a liberal Democrat, and he's looked at the facts and figures, and he's come out with a different conclusion than a lot of liberals or so-called progressives that are opposing Walmart. He thinks that Walmart is a success story and that it does an incredible amount to help low-income people in the United States. So that's real interesting, and it's kicked off a lot of debate. That a lot of these editorials that have appeared recently have mentioned Furman's paper and have been in reaction to some of the things that he said.
I'm just sort of curious, when I think about Walmart and I think about what they've done and how, you know, all these people are arguing that it's, you know, ruining the economy, it's ruining other businesses, that people can't compete, they can't live on the Walmart wages, on and on and on and on. And I sort of wonder, with the idea of a global economy,
mm-hmm.
that it would almost seem to me that that this is in some ways sort of a starting point for a true global economy where the other economic forces from other countries are actually hitting and impinging on us, and we're going to have to start changing the way we live in order to be able to maintain our standard of living.
Oh, we will. I mean, we definitely are in a period of change. There's no question about that. You know, whether we like it or not, we are in a global economy, and now, you know, we're not just competing. When we go out for a job now, we're not just competing with, you know, some of the people, you know, here in our town. We're competing with people from all over the world for jobs. I'm just looking through Furman's paper here. He had a really good statement, I think, that that kind of talked about that. And, you know, basically what he said is that, you know, our future lies in education. I think it's very important. Americans really need to refocus on education, in particular technical education, so we can be more competitive in the world's markets. You know, obviously, America is never going to compete any longer in positions where you have, you know, low skill workers or, you know, low paid, low skill manufacturing, you know, type jobs. I think those jobs are gone forever, and I think it's we just need to realize that, you know, that era has passed on, and that America's future, I think, is very bright, but we need to concentrate on high technology and innovations. And, you know, Americans traditionally have been some of the greatest innovators in history and come up with some of the best inventions and things like that. So we need to get back in touch with our roots and do that again, you know, and have an economy that is based on that type of thing. And the only way we can do it is to have the skilled workers. You know, one of the things I heard recently was kind of interesting is, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, well, Walmart outsources jobs and it's causing, you know, the ruination of our industrial economy. But what people don't realize is that companies like Microsoft and Intel and Dell and things are all doing the same thing too. You know, those are not companies that people think about. You know, it's like, oh, they run sweatshops and they outsource jobs. Well, they may not run sweatshops, but boy, they sure are outsourcing the jobs. You know, like when you call Dell Computer for tech assistance, now more than likely the phone's going to ring somewhere in India versus in Texas where Dell is located. And Intel and Microsoft recently have been in trips overseas in Asia looking for workers. And one of the things those companies are four square against is, you know, we're talking about immigration reform in this country and trying to tighten up our borders and things. And some of these high-tech companies are really against that because they claim they can't find enough qualified American workers to fill the jobs that they have, that they have to bring in these people from overseas, from China or India or Korea or other places to come and work because there aren't Americans that have those skills. And I don't know if that's true, but if it is true, it certainly is a stinging indictment on our education system, and I think that's what we really need to concentrate on, is to you know, to raise our kids and have them prepared to, you know, those are the living wage, you know, we always hear about the living wage, those are the living wage jobs of the future. You know, there's not going to be any more jobs in factories and things like that that you know, like a Boeing type thing. That's great, you know, that people have jobs like that at Boeing, but, you know, that's not realistic to expect, you know, everyone in the country to have employment like that. So, but high tech, though, is something that, you know, it could be in any small town. It can be in Pullman. You know, look at Schweitzer, where I work. That's a perfect example of it. And it's an example that other companies around the country could follow and improve the lot of their employees.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, what you're talking about is the innovation, leading the way, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it seems to me that Schweitzer is a great example of that. You know, the guy starts in the basement of his house, develops something that is not out there, as far as I understand, the main product that he created, and made a business and an industry out of it. And I mean, look what it's doing over there in the north part of town. I mean, that whole area of town is all growing up, and I mean, you could put your finger pretty much all at Schweitzer. He's really doing a lot. I mean, and it's that kind of innovation that is needed for people to be in, you know, in the 21st century economy. The jobs at Boeing, I mean, how many production jobs in Boeing have been lost over the years just by the simple fact that they're just not needed? The Detroit, the car companies. You know, just the economy is changing, and people need to change with it. And unfortunately, like you said, the education system, I think, is behind the times.
Yeah, I think our education system definitely is behind the curve on technical education. I think it's improving. I think there's a greater emphasis now on math and science. I think I could definitely see that now in the public schools, and I think that's great. But we're probably going to need, you know, maybe a generation of that to really get to the point where, you know, we can have the fully qualified workers, you know, that we need, you know, to do these jobs of the future. And I know even for us, you know, working at Schweitzer, it's real hard for us to find enough people. And I'm not saying that's because people aren't qualified. I mean, frankly, you know, we live in an area where we don't have a tremendous amount of people in the workforce, and unemployment is low. So, you know, we always have a lot of positions open. I think we have around 100 positions open, you know, right now. And, you know, we're always looking for people. And And, you know, it's, and I think it can be very successful. But you know, going back to the global economy, Schweitzer would not be as successful as it is now if we did not have a global economy where we were, you know, free to trade with our customers around the world. You know, I think we sell to about 110 different countries now. It's most of the world. And, in fact, that's been our largest growing area in the last few years has been internationally. And, you know, if we were to put in places all these, like, high tariffs and things like that to protect American industries, you know, to become protectionists and things like that so that other countries, you know, would be at a disadvantage in selling their goods here, then Schweitzer would not have been anywhere near as successful as we have been. You know, we are successful because we have that opportunity to go and compete in overseas markets. And people fail to realize, you know, we always hear a lot about, you know, the Chinese sweatshops and Walmart, you know, just exploits all the Chinese workers and sells all that cheap Chinese crap here in America. And what they're forgetting is that, you know, China is changing also. America's changing, but China is changing. And, you know, yeah, they may not be as democratic as we are, and a lot of the human rights and things are not on an American standard, and there may be some things that, you know, still we find shocking or may turn our nose up at, but China is definitely changing, and part of that is because they're growing. Their economy is just booming much, much more than any other country in the world, and they have a lot of cash, and that's beginning to trickle down to the people, and the people in China are beginning to have luxuries and consumer goods that they've never had access to before. And so what that does is, you know, China, of course, has the largest population of any country in the world, and that's a new market. You know, people don't realize that. That's a new market of, like, you know, over a billion, I guess it's like a billion and a half, almost 2 billion people that is now opening up to the rest of the world because now people have money to spend on items. So, you know, for example, with Schweitzer, we do a lot of business now with China. You know, we're you know, sure, you know, China sells us a lot of stuff, but then we're selling stuff back to China because now they have money to afford stuff. They're upgrading their infrastructure. They're having to put in all kinds of new transmission and distribution for electricity, you know, for all these new plants that they're building and factories and things. So ultimately, I think it is beneficial to us that other countries are happy, they're prosperous, they're good trading partners, they have money to spend, and they can buy American goods. I think the challenge for us is just to make things that they want to buy. You know, that's the important thing. You know, like I said about innovation and stuff, is we need to do it better than anybody else in the world, and that's one of our secrets at Schweitzer is, you know, we do compete with foreign companies. And but people prefer us because we have the quality and we give them the features and the innovation and everything else that they want. And so I think America can be competitive in the global economy. And I think ultimately it's good for everyone. But it is painful. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, it's a new phase of the economy, and it's going to cause a lot of disruption. Okay, and it looks like Scotty is on the telephone right now. So I will continue to talk, you know, it's been really interesting to see the comments that have appeared in some of these national papers. There's also been a paper recently released by a guy by the name of Zachary Courser, who's a professor at the University of Virginia, and he wrote the paper on behalf of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and the name of his paper is called Walmart and the Politics of American Retail. And Mr. Courser's conclusions are similar to Mr. Furman's in the fact that he agrees that Walmart is good for America. But then what he says is that ultimately that's not the question, is whether or not Walmart is good for America. It's whether or not they are doing a good enough job of explaining how they're good for America. He criticizes Walmart because they have not done a very good job of public relations, basically, that for many years Walmart has been insular and aloof and frankly paranoid on dealing with the press and the public, and because of that they've kind of allowed this image to fester over the years, and now, you know, they're seeing the results of that with all the attacks, you know, with the Walmart Watch and Wake Up Walmart, and in every community they go into, there's these groups that organize and try to oppose them. So you know, he makes the point, and it's an excellent point, of how that ever since the 19th century, every change in retail that, the American public has experienced has been met with various degrees of opposition, that you know, capitalism, American capitalism in particular, engages in creative destruction, but of all that creative destruction, it's the pain is most felt in retail, and that seems to be the thing that catches most people's attention and has the most protest. So he recommends that Walmart do a better job and have more effective communication between themselves and the American public. And he has a really good quote. I'm going to try to find it here, from a guy who actually, when in the 1920s in California with supermarkets, was going through something very similar. And what he basically says is there's making friends and making customers are two different jobs, separate but related. And the whole quote is, motorists may buy at your service station, but damn you because they think you are a monopoly. They may go out of their way to save a few pennies at your chain store and then denounce you for paying low wages. Making friends and making customers are two different jobs, separate but related. And like I said, this was a guy that was quoted from back in the 20s in California, where there was a lot of opposition to some of the supermarket chains that were opening up then. So, and it's been the same. You can go back to the Woolworth stores in the early 1900s and things like that. So whenever there's been a new innovation in retail, it's always been met with protest. And the movement against Walmart is just the latest example of that.
So with the idea of Walmart, the low wages, and sweatshops, we have a caller on the air. What's your name, caller?
My name is Drew.
Drew, how are you doing, man?
Doing well.
Good. So you said you work at Safeway part-time and you make about $7.25 an hour, and you'd have a hard time imagining somebody living on that kind of wage?
Yeah, really. I mean, as full-time work, I would have a hard time imagining it, because I think it's difficult. I mean, you can definitely do it, but I think it is difficult. But I think if that's really, like I said, I'm really not as well-read on the issue and what the real problem is as much as I would like to be. But really, I think what they're opposing is the exploitation of sweatshop workers, like you were saying, in China, and how they sell all that stuff. Is that really the real issue? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
The real issue of not wanting a Walmart in Pullman, or the issue of Walmart in general?
Walmart in general, because, I mean, this is big. Because
I think with that, it really depends on who you talk to. I think a lot of the issues of not wanting a Walmart in Pullman are the same issues of Walmart in general. You have some people that just don't like the idea of a big box store coming into a small town and, quote-unquote, ruining everything. Then a lot of the people who dislike the Walmart coming into Pullman here don't like the country, or excuse me, don't like the company in general because of their labor practices, of their perceived low wages, and other things. And you know, I want to address something you brought up, is the fact that you work and you're pretty much making minimum wage working at Safeway.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be hard for you to raise a family on that. Now, I would expect that if you're raising a family, first off, you would not settle at a minimum wage job, would you?
Right. No.
No, exactly. I mean, you're a student. You're working that job because they're giving you flexible hours, and you're making enough money that maybe you could go out on the weekends with your friends and have a little bit of gas money. Maybe you're paying your way through school or part of it, and that's using to supplement your income. It's a great job for that. How many other students in Pullman and you know, maybe even over at the U of I need part-time jobs?
I'd probably imagine, you know, quite a few.
You know, I mean, the thing is there's room for part-time jobs, and I would. That Walmart will bring in, I believe, three high-paying jobs will be lost. I believe that was the 2-to-3 ratio. I might be a little bit wrong about that. But I have to question where these high-paying jobs are going to come from. Certainly, Schweitzer's not going to lay people off because you got a couple people working at the, you know, at the teller stand at Walmart. You know, you look at yourself at Safeway. Like you said, you're barely making above minimum wage. Even if Walmart pays minimum wage, it's not like you're going to the quote unquote high paying job is going to be lost. Safeway's not going to leave because Walmart comes in.
Right.
Safeway is going to compete beautifully with Walmart. As a matter of fact, I think there's a lot of people that go to Safeway because of the loyalty, and they will continue to go there. Safeway has doubled the size of their store in the last couple of years. I mean, talk about loss of business. When I came to Pullman, there were four stores. There was Finch's Empire Foods, there was Excel Foods, there was Dismore's, and there was Safeway. And now there's two. You know, the two main stores have, I mean, the other two stores, Finch's and Excel, were relatively small stores compared to Dismore's and Safeway. You know, so, I mean, you could almost argue that a big chain store took out the small hometown stores. Finch's Empire Foods was a local-owned store. They're gone now because you got these big conglomerates crushing them.
Right, and see, that's actually an excellent point that you made, and that's why I'm right on the money with you, because like when I said, I called and I said, let me preface this with, I'm a liberal, but the fact that I'm hearing you say that's more of a, what I like to call, an old-fashioned conservative attitude, you know, economically speaking, or fiscally, you know, speaking. Because really, with the Republican Party, I've heard a lot less of that kind of stance that you're taking. Because when I was in there earlier and you told me that you were pretty right-wing and stuff, I was expecting a little different. and really, the holidays talk, I was expecting that. But really, with hearing that, because I should mention this, too. I used to work for the AFL-CIO. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Oh, yeah, it's a big old union.
Yeah. And let me tell you this. I actually quit because now, like I said, at Safeway, okay, I've got very flexible hours, very, very, very flexible hours, and they let me have off whenever I need it. In fact, I had off this entire finals week. It was great. I'm enjoying my free time right now. And but with the AFL-CIO, I was door-to-door knocking on people's door, you know, explaining, you know, what conglomerate, you know, was not giving, you know, proper wages, and they were overworking their employees and, you know, weren't living up to workers' rights and stuff. That was harder work than what I'm doing at, you know, a big conglomerate like Safeway. Sure. That was a lot harder work, and I actually wound up quitting because it was door-to-door, and I'd work, you know, 8 hours a day, and I'd walk, you know, still like 5 miles, you know. So, and actually, you know, so... you do offer a good point. I'm glad to hear you say that the conglomerates, you know, getting rid of smaller businesses. I'm glad to hear you at least, you know, mention that and accept that as, you know, part of reality and part of what's happening. And also, you are right on the money with Safeway competing with Walmart, because actually that is true. I think that they actually, in sales, as far as grocery sales, they are actually ahead of Walmart, because Walmart does do grocery now too.
Right, and the Supercenter, the Walmart would be bringing in, would have a grocery store as well. Now, one thing you were going to talk about was the sweatshops, and what I'm curious about is, when you talk about a sweatshop, you're talking about the places overseas where people are being paid hardly any money, working long hours in dangerous conditions to build products that we're buying at super cheap wages. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, is compared to, say this company X produces all these products for different companies, different countries, and let's say this company X produces stuff for Walmart, is company X paying their people in that country less at their place than any other manufacturing company in China would be paying, let's say? So, like, let me rephrase that, because I think I was a little bit weird with that. Since you got China, you got company A, company X. Company X builds stuff for Walmart as well as other companies. Company A just builds stuff for maybe, goes to England, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Is company A paying their employees more than company X because company X is dealing with Walmart? Or are they getting paid the same wages no matter which company they're working for?
I would guess that it's probably similar wages. I'm not sure exact, and I think that's where some of the argument, refuting argument that you get would come from, is just the numbers, and really that kind of stuff doesn't.
Right. So the thing is that whether we buy it from company A or X, we're going to be the people over there are making the same amount of money, and it's not the fact that Walmart is buying the stuff or even any other big chain stores buying their items from some sweatshop, quote-unquote, overseas. No matter where they bought it overseas, if they bought it from specific countries, they would be, quote-unquote, buying it from a sweatshop.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's sort of unfair. It gives almost a unfair mental picture, because when you talk about somebody working in a sweatshop, you picture this 5-year-old kid, you know, sweat pouring down his face, building some product really cheaply that you're going to go to the store and buy and take to your luxurious home, and that if it wasn't for say the Walmarts or the other big companies buying from that specific company in Japan, China, that, you know, otherwise they'd be making, you know, a lot of money over there and everything, and that Walmart's keeping them them and their wages down, and I don't think that's the case. I think Walmart is buying from them because it's so cheap. It's the same reason why Dell goes to India for tech support. It's because it's cheap. It's not that all of a sudden Dell came in and it got cheap. It already was cheap, and Dell's like, hey, I could use Americans, or I could use the guys from India, and the guys from India have the same amount of money. And, you know, you look at all these other companies, they look around the world, and we got a world economy. You look around the world, you say, okay, you could build a kitty cat toy here in America, but you're paying the wages of a union worker, most likely, to build this product, and you're paying all these union people to ship it all over the country, and you're adding so much money to the price where, you know, somebody might buy their kitty a toy if it's going to cost them $3. But if that same toy costs $12, they might think twice about doing it. So what are you going to do? You're going to look for a place where they're going to be able to build that kitty toy a lot cheaper. And that just right. happens to be overseas in these quote-unquote sweatshops.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's... I just have a hard time viewing us as the bad guys because we're willing to use other countries' labor where that's their market, that's their economy. And that's sort of why I talked to Tom a little bit earlier about the whole idea of this global economy and how it's, you know, it's, we're going to have to start changing our lifestyle to meet this global economy, because as they start becoming more industrial, you know, they're going to start getting more money for their jobs. We're going to either have to start paying more for our products, and you know, some more of our manufacturing jobs and other jobs are probably going to be going overseas. It's going to become a global economy.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually right on the money with you there too, because I can relate to that. When I was, before I came here to go to school, I was in Seattle and I was doing film school, real small film school, and it's actually starting to grow a little bit, but. What we would do a lot of times, and I, you know, we would help, like, just be like, you know, techie workers or like, you know, intern workers with our professors who were actually shooting movies. And a lot of times they would go to Canada because of the same reason. It was cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, and the exchange rate really threw it off. I'm right on the money with you that with there too. So I know exactly what you mean.
You have any comments here, Tom?
Yeah, it's kind of talking about, you know, back to the whole thing about the, you know, Finches and Excel and things like mm-hmm. that. And just reading again from that paper that Zachary Courser wrote, you know, in his executive summary, it says that the conclusions reached are that Walmart fits very well within a pattern of retail innovation and displacement by which consumers benefit from new systems of retail, that Walmart is very much in line with the rest of the American retail sector in terms of benefits and pay, and that the dissolution of Main Street retail is not caused by Walmart per se, but is part of a larger overall change in consumer habits. Considering the discount retail sector as a whole, most of the criticisms directed toward Walmart are largely shared throughout the industry. So going back to Scotty's point about, you know, those factories in China don't just work for Walmart. Probably the same factory sells stuff to Target and Fred Meyer and some of the other stores as well. It's just, you know, it's the same factory that's just, you know, three different boxes when it goes out the door. But with this, Mr. Courser, the point he's making in his paper is that unlike those other companies, Walmart has done a very poor job of defending itself. You know, it's the biggest retailer out there, so of course that makes the biggest target.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the siege mentality that Walmart has developed over the last 10 years or so, you know, if they had not had that siege mentality to begin with, if they had done a much better job of engaging the public and telling them how what they were doing was good for them, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation right now. There wouldn't be all these demonstrations and protests and petitions and groups and everything else opposing Walmart, just as there aren't really, you know, you don't see a similar, you know, we mentioned Target and the Salvation Army and the trouble they got in with Christmas, but, you know, when Target comes to town, generally speaking, there aren't people that start mobilizing and there's not groups that are opposing Target, because Target has done a much better job of packaging itself and marketing itself and handle its PR a lot better. And so if Walmart is guilty of anything, they're just guilty of bad PR.
You know, it almost seems they're guilty of their own
success,
yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
They're so successful. They're going everywhere, and people are like, "Oh, whoa!" You know, Starbucks doesn't have quite the big whiplash, but the backlash. But you know, it's sort of funny. There's a lot of jokes about Starbucks and how they're everywhere. You know, the recent Simpsons episode, showed Bart going into this mall, and he walks by all these stores, and it says, you know, future home of Starbucks.
Right.
And he goes in, and he gets an earring, and on his way back out, he has a Starbucks coffee, and they pretty much back up, and they show three levels, and every single business side by side is Starbucks.
Right. You know? And also, I was thinking about the Austin Powers movie, too, where they had, like, you know, Dr. Evil had the map of the United States, and there was, like, the Space Needle and Starbucks, and, you know. So, yeah, it's... But you know, places like Starbucks and places like Walmart, people forget, and this is the key thing that I think that all of Walmart's critics forget, is the only reason they're popular is because we choose to shop there.
Exactly.
That's the only reason. The only reason that Walmart is opening so many stores, the only reason they want to open, they don't want to come to Walmart did not sit around. There's not like a, I've said this before, there's not an evil cabal of men in Bentonville, Arkansas, figuring out, ooh, where can we go next to destroy a town? You know, they're not coming here to pollute the water. They're not coming here to force people out of their jobs. They're not coming here to close down stores. They're coming here to make money because they know that people want to shop at Walmart. That's why Walmart's successful. That's why Starbucks is successful. You know, whether people like it or not, the reason they flourish is because consumers choose to patronize those stores with their business.
I agree completely with Tom. Definitely. I think it's just the same as you were saying. You know, this is why they buy overseas, because it's cheaper. People will go there because it is cheaper. And I'm really not sure who has the big issue and you know, who would raise a stink, you know, regarding like a partisan issue, you know, whether it's a liberal or a conservative. But you guys have to agree here. The only thing liberal about Walmart is the return policy. You can return anything at the store and get it back and get your money back. So,
well, now according to,
I'm gonna hop off here and listen to the rest of your show. But thanks for taking my call and putting me on the air and everything.
Thanks for calling, Drew.
Have a good one. No problem.
Bye. No, I was just going to jump in and say, but according to Jason Furman, you know, he does think that Walmart is a liberal success story, because, you know, going back to the caller's point about. Or what I was saying about, you know, people choose to shop there. You know, there's been a lot of debate about that. You know, people say, well, that's just crass consumerism. You know, people are just obsessed with buying all this cheap crap. They just go there, they wheel it out, you know, in these grocery carts. And I think someone wrote recently in a letter to the editors, like, from the grocery cart to the dumpster. You know, because it's like that we're just filling up all of our little cookie cutter houses with all this junk that we don't need, and then we end up just throwing it away in the trash can, and it's all this just waste. And you know, so there's debate about that, but
you know, that's the great thing about being an American.
Well, yeah,
I have that option to do so.
God bless America.
I mean, if I want to do that, by more power to me, right?
Right. But what people lose in all of that, you know, when they focus on that, they're focusing on maybe middle class people, they're focusing on upper income people, maybe that have disposable income to throw away on cheap crap and things like that. But what's really been coming out recently, and what Furman, the point that he tries to make in his paper is, you know, it's been a huge benefit to the lower income people. You know, it's Walmart has opened up a whole world of goods and things that lower income people could never afford in the past. I mean, it's improved their quality of life. Now, you can debate whether it's improved the quality of life of the middle or upper class, but I don't think there's any debating that it's improved the quality of life, you know, of lower income people. You know, it allows them to buy things that, you know, there was a lot of talk about, well, you know, on the day after Thanksgiving, Walmart had these like $300 laptops for sale, and oh, you know, jokes about they must just be pieces of crap and they'd probably break as soon as you get home or whatever. It's like, yeah, but at least it's giving a chance for some people to have a laptop or a computer that maybe you've never had one before. So I think that's what gets lost in all the rhetoric about capitalism and consumerism and things like that, is that you know, it really is beneficial to low income people. And by low income people, you know, that includes students. And I think that's why, you know, I've said it all along, and I continue to say, I think that's why Walmart is such a wonderful fit for Pullman, is that, you know, let's face it, most students are, you know, relatively low income, at least temporarily, for the 4 years they're in school. And I think it's going to be a great benefit to students that live around here to have those options, particularly with food, because I just remember that story in the Evergreen, I guess it was maybe a month or two ago, about... international students were taking the bus. They're taking the Wheatland Express over to Moscow, and the Palouse Mall said that the bus couldn't stop there anymore, so now Walmart has allowed the bus to stop there. And so you say, well, why are all these international students going over to Moscow? Well, they're going over to Moscow to shop at Winco, And, you know, right now they're having to get, until after the Palouse Mall stopped allowing them to stop there, they were having to stop at the Kibbe Dome, which is a mile away from Winco. So these students were walking a mile to Winco and back to get their groceries. And I just thought, okay, that just blew me away, because it's like we have two grocery stores in town, both of which are right on the Pullman Transit routes, you know, easily accessible from campus. Mm-hmm. But these international students were choosing to go over to Winco and shop. And it's like, why? Well, because for the most part, international students are on a very, very tight budget, and they have to stretch their food dollar as far as they can. And they do that by going to Winco. And I thought that, you know, that wasn't a pro-Walmart article, but I thought anyone could read that. And that was like a really, you know, damning indictment on the on the grocery situation in Pullman, that was happening. So, and that's why I think Walmart will be great, is it'll change that balance of power that we have right now as far as groceries go.
Yeah, keep people in Pullman. We're not asking to get Moscow people here. We're just asking to keep those going to Moscow to stay here instead.
Which is a good segue into the next point I wanted to talk about, which was since the last time I was on the show, there's been an announcement that Walmart will be constructing a supercenter on the east side of Moscow over there by where the old Tiedemann's used to be.
That's trickery. Tomfoolery, I tell you. They can't do that.
So, and now there's a group that has organized in Moscow. Shocker, sort of. I know.
MARD,
yes, whatever. I don't even think they have a name yet, but no. They've organized their meeting, and they're going to try to oppose the supercenter in Moscow. And what I found that was interesting about the whole situation was the kickoff meeting that they had was they had the representatives from the Pullman Alliance for Responsible Development over in Moscow to share experiences and give them some tips and tricks on what to do. And I just thought that was real interesting because, you know, on one hand, you can make the argument that, Pullman people should be helping Moscow people to oppose a supercenter because that's better for us in Moscow, or better for us in Pullman. If Moscow doesn't get a supercenter and we do, that inevitably would be better for us in Pullman because we would probably attract people over the border to shop here. But at the same time, many of Pard's arguments about a supercenter in Pullman, or to oppose a supercenter in Pullman, have been that it would have a bad effect on Moscow, that Moscow would lose their Walmart, and that would be bad on the unemployment situation in Moscow and Latah County. So I found that was kind of an interesting, you know, one of those things. It's like it's kind of circular logic, didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me because they were kind of arguing both sides of the issue. But I think when you get right down to it, you know, it's not really a Pullman thing. It's not a Moscow thing. It's just an anti-Walmart thing. It doesn't matter what city or town that Walmart would choose to open up in. The anti-Walmart forces are just going to be against it no matter what. So I think that shows a lot of disingenuity in terms of like, well, we're just fighting for Pullman, because, you know, that obviously isn't the case. So,
the thing, you know, it's sort of interesting, you know, because after you were on the show and this information came out, we actually talked about it a little bit on the air, and it was sort of funny because the argument was made that when we build the Walmart here, the one in Moscow would have to close because there wouldn't be room for two. And now all of a sudden, that argument that was being made by Pard is going to have to change because obviously there will be room for two.
Right, obviously. Walmart feels there's room for two. And like I said, their argument against the Walmart in Pullman is always going to have such a bad effect on the economy in Moscow. It's like, well, instead of Pard helping the supercenter opposition get started, they should be celebrating the supercenter in Moscow, because now all the concerns that they had about the Pullman, but like I said, it isn't a Moscow issue. It's not a Pullman issue. It's just anti-Walmart, and it shows that they're not really concerned about our community. They're not ultimately concerned about Pullman or really about Moscow. It's a political agenda that, you know, like I said, has to do with Walmart and what it stands for versus, you know, what's good for Pullman or good for Moscow. And So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Moscow. I really think they're going to have a lot more problems opening up over there than they do in Pullman. Just based on the last city election they had in Moscow, they definitely elected a more quote-unquote progressive mayor and a few more progressive city council members, and they have a big box ordinance that's being drafted, and so I think the process is going to be probably 10 times more difficult than what they've gone through over here. So, and it is, it'll be interesting to see, and with all the dynamics, of course, that'll be going on between Moscow and Pullman, and there'll be people in Moscow that are concerned about the business they'll lose to Pullman if we get one and Moscow doesn't.
Right.
That's going to be a factor. So, the only thing I can say is, there's been a lot of there seems to be a new emphasis now that the one at Supercenter has been open. I've seen a lot of letters to the editor from both Pullman people and Moscow people that keep talking about, well, we need to have a study done on the Pullman-Moscow area or the Palouse area and things like that. And I'm really opposed to that because you could never do a study that incorporated Pullman and Moscow, whether people want to admit it or not. I mean, obviously the two towns have a lot in common and we have to cooperate and work together on a lot of different issues. But, when you're talking about two different taxing jurisdictions, that where we're both dependent on completely different sources of income to run our local governments, we're going to be in a competitive mode, and I think anyone's very, very idealistic and unrealistic to not admit that Moscow and Pullman are going to be competitive in terms of retail. And so, no matter how we feel about Moscow, we cannot allow those feelings to interfere with what's best for our community, because this is where we live, and this is we have to fund our services here. So I think we've got to put Pullman first, and so I think it's just silly to have the two communities bonded together in terms of to say, well, we only need a lot of it has been like, well, we only need one kind of store here, both communities, we'll just have one kind of store in both communities. Like, well, that's absurd, to make those
fine, we'll take the super yeah, we'll take,
we'll
have
take
Target.
All, yeah we'll take all the big ones. I mean, we can't divvy it up that way. We have two competing tax structures, and we have to think accordingly. So,
well, I mean, there was back before PRH was built and before Gritman was expanded, there was a lot of talk about having a shared hospital on the corridor somewhere,
right,
where both communities, rather than having two separate hospitals, all that money could go into one hospital and make an even better hospital for everyone.
Right.
And there was a lot of sentiment, mainly in Moscow, that they didn't want that. They wanted Gritman where it was, in the middle of the city, where it was close to everyone and not way over near Pullman.
Sure.
And, it's one of those things where there's that kind of mentality that everybody wants their thing for their city. And there's not necessarily a will to share between Pullman and Moscow necessarily.
No, and people can decry that, but that's just the way it is. And like I said, I think it all comes back to money. It's nice to be able to share things with Moscow, but ultimately it comes down to who's going to pay for it. It's like, okay, great, all of our retail is over in Moscow right now, and that's great for them, and it's bad for us. People could say, well, the argument all along has been, well, we already have a Walmart just 7 miles away. It's like, yeah, but it's 7 miles and
in
a state border,
exactly,
away. It's like, you forget, you cross, you don't just leave the county, you leave the state when you cross over to Walmart. So our money ends up going down to the Boise, and I've talked to people about the sales tax structure in Idaho, and they say that, unlike in Washington, the sales tax structure in Idaho is much worse as far as the localities being able to hang on to their share of it. So not only does our money get exported to Moscow, when we shop over there, a lot of it ends up going down to Boise because it doesn't even stay on the Palouse. So that's even more reason for us to keep our money here at home. So
you were talking a little bit about one of the things you wanted to talk about a little bit, because you're talking about going across to Moscow, and then once you hit the border and get to Walmart, new city, new county, new state, new taxes, new everything. And there's a proposal on the books that would maybe put something really close to there, but keep it on our side of the border. And it'd be sort of interesting to hear a little bit more about that as soon as we get back from this break.
It's a dog.
Need a place to live? Looking for a roommate? The ASWSU Housing Commission can help. Visit the Housing Commission's website at cub.wsu.edu/hc for renter's guide and housing listings. They will also place an ad for you for free. For more info, call 335-9574.
Hey, Amy, how was your weekend? Bad. First, my roommate calls me because the heater broke and the curtains are on fire, so I rush home and get a speeding ticket along the way. At my apartment, my neighbor hands me a beer to douse the flames, the cops show up, see me with a beer, and hand me an MIP. And now the landlord's on my case for the crispy curtains.
Oh, wow. Well, haven't you heard of Student Legal Services?
No, what's that?
They offer free legal advice for WSU students face-to-face with an attorney.
There's a lawyer on campus for students?
Yep, they're in Cub 316, or just call them. Their number is 509-335-9539. Interns are there from 9 to 5 Monday through Thursday, and from 9 to 1 on Fridays.
But I don't want everyone to know my problems.
Everything's confidential with Student Legal Services. And tell your friends, because they can help with other issues, too.
Oh, thank you, Ashley. You're my bestest friend ever.
Just remember, Student Legal Services is free!
You're listening to the award-winning The PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, the third floor of the Cub. We're going to continue our conversation with Tom. We're talking about all sorts of fun little political issues. We had sports and technology to get to, but we might not even get through all of our political issues before the end of the day. If you want to reach us in the studio, it's 509-335-2207. The website is www.kzuu.org, or you could reach us at our website at www.thepes.com. Alrighty, when we left you, we were talking about Walmart. We were talking about the border battle, going across the border to get some stuff. And right near the border, just before you cross it to get stuff, there's some pretty exciting news coming up. You know anything about it, Tom?
Yeah, it's, well, go back a little bit. For about the past 10 years, the Whitman County Commissioners were examining zoning for what was known as the Pullman-Moscow Corridor, which is basically State Route 270 between Pullman and Moscow, with the intent of trying to have some commercial development go into the corridor. So, like I said, about 10 years worth of public hearings and debates and proposals and back and forth. And one of the proposals called for anyone that bought a lot would have to leave 50% of the land in green space. In other words, not to develop it. And that was pretty onerous. Most people don't really want to buy a whole lot of land. That means you'd have to buy basically twice as much land as you would need to put in a store. And so a lot of people balked at that, and so there wasn't really much action on the corridor. So the commissioners amended the green space requirement down to 25%. This was just a couple months ago, I think, back at the end of October, beginning of November. I forget exactly when it was, but they had a public hearing. Only two people came. No one disagreed. They clanged hit the gavel down, called it a done deal, and said, that's it. Now the next step is, we're going to start getting people in here. So shortly after the commissioners had approved the zoning for the corridor, a sign went up over just past where the Pea and Lentil Center and the Appaloosa Horse Center are, right there on the border between Idaho and Washington. A big sign went up that said, zone C3 commercial, big lots available, big box lots, pads, etc. So there was a sign, and that immediately kind of kicked off some speculation. And then there was a story on KQQQ, one of our local radio stations, that there was a website that actually had plans up for this particular site, and Lowe's was mentioned as one of the stores. Lowe's, of course, is a big home development or center, kind of like Home Depot, was one of the names that was listed on the site plan. So One of the readers of my blog actually found this website because the news story didn't refer to the website. So this reader of mine found it, and I posted it on the website. And it was quite interesting. It was quite the development. It was probably, 300,000 some square feet. There was provision for two big box stores, one of which was already penciled in as Lowe's, and there was room for one other one and several other smaller stores, and there were pads for restaurants in the parking lot or smaller type stores in the parking lot. And it was right, like the back of the Lowe's store was like virtually touching the Idaho border. And it was quite the elaborate thing. There were two pages. Like the first page was a satellite photo of the area, showing like where all the other retail stores and restaurants are located in Moscow, and had some demographics in terms of the average income of the people that lived within 5 miles, 10 miles, 15 miles, all the different radiuses, so it looked like there had been a lot of work put into it, and it sure looked like it was kind of a done deal. So somehow Michelle Dupler at the Daily News, I'm sure these rumors were flying around, like I said, on my website and the radio, and she found out about it, and so the Daily News did some checking, and Lowe's is not saying anything. The development company in Boise, which is where this website is from, they're not saying anything, and the Whitman County Commissioners, the Whitman County Planning Department has not received any application. So at this point, all we can say is that it's a rumor, but boy, it sure looks like a very believable rumor based on all the work that's going on. In fact, since the time that the site plan was originally put out on the website, it's been amended to add yet another big box store to the site plan, and the site plan itself was dramatically changed. Now, instead of being more of a traditional strip mall type configuration, it's now configured where the three big box stores are kind of in a triangle, and there's kind of a center turnabout, and it's more of like a shopping village type configuration now, looking at it, from what it was before. So obviously work is continuing. Maybe the story in the Daily News or all the buzz about the Lowe's generated even more interest in the site. So now they've penciled in another store. So it's kind of fun to speculate who that might be, who the two other stores might be, and how this all fits into the big picture of retail in Moscow Pullman.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to think of who it could be, because it's not going to be a Home Depot.
They're not going to. Well, see, that's going to be real interesting, because Home Depot, I mean, this was pretty much confirmed. Home Depot was in Moscow earlier this summer. They were scouting out a location behind the Palouse Mall. There's some land that the U of I owns back there, and so they were scouting that out. They thought that'd be a pretty good location for them. Walmart has, but it's interesting, there's been a lot of talk, like one of the letters from PARD recently just cracked me up, because obviously people are not vibing with their arguments, because they had run a couple of candidates in our city council election who were thoroughly trounced, and so I think they begin to realize that people aren't tuning into their arguments. So now some of the latest letters to the editor said, well, maybe a moderate sized big box store would be acceptable, versus Walmart, something smaller, which I don't know if people realize, but it's the smaller big box stores like a Home Depot or like a Lowe's or like a Best Buy or a Borders bookstore or Barnes and Noble or an Old Navy. Those types of big box stores are called category killers, and they're called category killers for a reason, because they sell Walmart sells a vast array of products, including food, but they don't specialize in any one particular thing. They're just very traditional general merchandise stores. So in many ways, Walmart does not represent a threat to a particular store in town, because there's always niche type stores that can take over and specialize in something and sell higher end goods or higher quality goods of a particular line, like clothing or bicycles or whatever it might be, and they're not affected by Walmart at all, because Walmart generally concentrates on the lower end of the market. But when you get a store like Home Depot in town or Lowe's or Best Buy that concentrate on one particular area of the market, they have pretty much everything from soup to nuts. They have like the high end stuff all the way down to the low end stuff, and usually at much cheaper prices than the local stores can match. So those types of stores, that's why they're called category killers, because generally speaking, when they come in, they take out all the other stores in that particular category. So in some ways, those types of stores are more dangerous than Walmart, and yet Pard has been arguing that those are maybe the kinds of stores we should get in town, which I think is kind of interesting. But so obviously Home Depot is interested in the Moscow Pullman area, and if Lowe's comes in, you know, that's really going to change the, you know, the dynamic. I mean, they'll probably have to, if Home Depot does want to come in, they'd have to find some place that was relatively far away, I guess, in terms of Moscow Pullman from Lowe's. So and of course the big issue with the Moscow Pullman corridor is utilities. There was a proposal, the commissioners had made a proposal to the Pullman City Council to extend water and sewer services along the corridor in return for a share of the sales tax money, because, you know, right now this site that we're talking about is totally located in Whitman County. So if it were to open, Pullman would not see a dime of the sales tax money. And in fact, you can make an argument that even though it's in Washington, in many ways it would still be just as bad for Pullman, because it's still pulling people over towards, you know, the Moscow direction. It's like if they go over to Lowe's to shop, you know, they're that close to Moscow, they're going to jump on over and maybe eat lunch there and go to some of the other stores, you know, in Moscow. So it's kind of the same, it'd be kind of perpetuating the same problem that we're facing now. I mean, yes, you know, Pullman is in Whitman County, and we are residents of Whitman County, and we do receive some, you know, services through the county. So I guess in some ways it's good. It would be good for the county and good for us indirectly. But I think that's still having that shopping center there would still present some, you know, serious challenges to Pullman, retail. So no matter what happens there, you know, we still need to build up our retail in Pullman, and hopefully one day. And going back to the utilities, the Pullman City Council declined the commissioner's proposal because the extending utilities could cost up to $14 million. And frankly, the city just doesn't have that kind of money. But if we get a Walmart and our sales tax picture improves and our revenue picture improves, you know, then other stores will come in, and then other stores will improve our sales tax picture. So, you know, it wouldn't be inconceivable that perhaps down the road the city of Pullman could put in the utilities, because I know we don't want to lose out on the revenues that that would generate. So then the question is, if they do put this site in, you know, since there aren't any utilities now, what do they do? And some people have speculated, well, Moscow might run the utilities over the border, you know, in return for, you know, X amount of money they would have to pay to do that. But I don't know, that would be very politically difficult, I would think, for Moscow to do that, because, you know, there's Moscow Building Supply, there's hardware stores and stuff in Moscow, and they know they would suffer, by having a Lowe's there, and plus all the sales tax money would be going over to Washington. So I have a really hard time envisioning, especially the current administration that just got elected to Moscow, I have a really hard time envisioning them signing up for something like that. So I don't know. It's going to be fun to see. I mean, for all I know, all this has already been figured out behind the scenes, and usually whenever there's a situation like this, you know, where everybody's, you know, closed-lipped and nobody's talking, well, that doesn't mean anything's going on. It usually means there's a lot going on. And
they don't want to give it away.
Yeah, there's probably been tons of discussions going on behind the scenes, you know, maybe with the commissioners, maybe with the Pullman City Council, Moscow City Council. You know, we don't know about, what might have been discussed and planned out and things like that. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how this develops over the, you know, next few months and years. But it certainly looks like it's more than a rumor, just based on the site plans that I've seen. Definitely.
And, you know, it's like you were saying, the idea of extending services from Moscow over there would, you know, obviously be the shortest run. You wouldn't have, you know, what they call off-site construction, because essentially, if you were to think about a utility run of 7 miles to service a couple stores, that would be just a huge cost. It would be so hard to overcome in any kind of relatively short-term period of time. What would be great is if a whole bunch of businesses were to go in, starting from the Pullman side, working their way that way, and the utilities follow them along. You know, that, of course, would be a better way to go. But, you know, if Moscow, and like you said, that the city council they have now that seems so anti box store, and they're definitely getting the small town mindset. We don't want any outsiders coming to our area.
Right.
I would have a hard time seeing them do it. And like you said, the Moscow Pullman Building Supply companies, Lowe's would hurt them dramatically, because, like you said, Whereas with the Walmart, you got the lower end goods, and they do a lot of everything. Lowe's would be lumber, construction, building, and that's what Pullman and Moskow Building Supply are all about.
Yeah, they'd be selling essentially the same types of things. It's just Lowe's, because they're bigger, would be able to sell it cheaper, and that's what I'm saying. That's a category killer. That ends up putting, that would probably put one or more of our local building supplier hardware stores, out of business. So, I think stores like that are coming. I mean, I think, again, we go back to the whole Walmart argument. It's not that it's wrong or that it's right. It's just what customers prefer. I know lots of people in Pullman, lots of my coworkers, including myself, who make the 35-mile-plus trek down to the Home Depot in Lewiston to go shop, because, frankly, there just aren't some types of things that you can get. There's just not the selection of items, here on the Palouse, especially if you're a homeowner. And given all the home construction that's going on now, record year in both Pullman and Moscow for building new homes, and there's even more subdivisions on the way for next year. I mean, it would seem like this area is crying out for some sort of a store like a Home Depot or Lowe's. So it's really not surprising to me that Lowe's is already extremely interested in locating here. And I guess to them, it seems like it would be the perfect location for Lowe's, because it's kind of in between the two towns. But yet, by choosing to locate in Washington in an area where the zoning has already been resolved, they would avoid a lot of the hassles of trying to open up in Pullman or Moscow, where, as you've seen, there's groups that are going to oppose a box store coming in. So I'm sure that was the strategic thinking that was behind that, and because of that. See, that's the unfortunate side effect. That's one of the reasons that I've been so vehement in my opposition to PARD and these other anti-Walmart groups, and that's why a lot of us got together and formed this group called Brio, because it has consequences, because and we're seeing maybe a potential consequence of that. Stores are going to look to come here, and they go, well, gosh, look at that. There's all these people in Pullman that are against Walmart, and then now there's all these people in Moscow that are against Walmart. Well, who's to say, they don't like box stores, they don't like this, they don't like that. We're not going to go there, but hey, look, Whitman County opened up this nice little sliver of land for us, and it's all zoned, and there's not going to be any kind of, there's no hurdles or hoops or anything else we have to jump through. We'll go there. And so they'll do that, and we, Moscow loses out and Pullman loses out, because, we are perceived as being business unfriendly places to locate. And I've said all along, I celebrate PARD's First Amendment rights. I'm a firm believer in the First Amendment, and I think everyone should, always have a right to speak their piece and to demonstrate, peacefully, if they want to have petitions or whatever it is they want to do. That's fantastic. But, like I said, you have to realize there's always consequences to that. Free speech doesn't come without consequences. Everyone knows that in your life. It's like, you can say whatever you want to, but gosh, if you have a girlfriend or a wife or something like that, you realize that sometimes when you exercise your right to free speech that, you may not be happy with the results of having done that. So free speech isn't always right. You have the right to do it, but it's not always right what you say. So, so I think we've really got a lot of work to do to turn around our reputation, because we need Pullman to grow, and we need that revenue, because we're growing in population. And the money's just not going to be there for the services that people are going to expect.
And, the thing that is interesting is you sit there and you look at the site, destroy everything, and nobody will ever want to come in because it'll be Walmart town, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, take a look at why do you think they're choosing to be so close to Moscow rather than building closer to the Pullman end or somewhere in the middle where it'd be an equal distance?
Right.
There are so many right now, that part of Moscow is a destination. And be close to the destination so people don't have to go out of the way to get to where you are. I would bet that that's why they're looking at that specific area of land and not anywhere else.
Sure.
on the 7-mile stretch.
Sure, because they could locate right outside the border with Pullman if they wanted to. And in fact, once you just go right outside of the city limits, you'll notice there's a big sign there, that's been there for a while that says, land is zone C3, commercial and everything. But you're right, you probably won't see as much interest there because, you want to go where the traffic is. One of the big issues always about Walmart from the beginning has been, traffic. Traffic's a good thing. We're not talking about gridlock, but traffic is a good thing because traffic are customers. Those stores, you're not going to have customers unless you have cars and traffic that are coming by there to see your store and to stop in and shop. And that's why stores congregate together. That's why auto dealerships, you ever go to Spokane, it's like there's always like, you know, 10 auto dealerships right beside each other, because why not? You know, somebody's going to be there to look at one car place, and it can easily just go down and check out the other one. You know, you don't want to have all of your retail scattered all over the town, because that's just not the way people shop, and you lose out that way. So, you know, we're just going to have to be real careful. Like I said, it'll be real interesting to see what happens. I know that Bishop Boulevard, all of vacant land on Bishop Boulevard has been optioned. From my understanding, that there's no land available left now to purchase on Bishop Boulevard, that all the empty spaces in the Wheatland Mall are also are optioned, all contingent on Walmart coming in. So, you know, if we do get the Walmart here, like you were talking about with Moscow and Lowe's choosing to be down close to the Walmart there, I think it's a given. I mean, it's not just a given; it's a scientific fact. I mean, you can look in town after town after town after town across the country where Supercenter has gone in, and there's been tons of retail that come in behind it, and I think that's what's going to happen with us in Bishop Boulevard. And so I think that's why it behooves us to get a Supercenter on Bishop sooner rather than later, before the retail impetus moves down to the corridor into the Lowe's site.
Yeah, and you know, one thing, you work for Schweitzer, and you know, I don't know how much inside information you have, but you had mentioned there's 100-plus open jobs right now, and I had heard one of the biggest problems Schweitzer has getting people here right now is the poor housing market. I mean, there's just so few houses to purchase that it's hard to get people in, and that's one of the reasons why he wants to put in some houses, and, you know, more construction is good. But I would also think that, look at the quality of life, look at the options of shopping and everything, you know. Why would somebody want to move to Pullman, Washington, where it's hard to get a house and where you have to drive 8 miles to get to major shopping options, and even farther to get to real major shopping options? You know, we need to offer things here that's going to make it attractive for the engineers and the other high-quality jobs, for those people to say, hey, yeah, Pullman's going to be a good place for us to go to raise our kids, to bring our family, to start a new life. Because essentially they're going to have to give up whatever life they have, wherever they have it, to come to Pullman, Washington. And I just sort of wonder at what point is, you know, it seems to me that Schweitzer is making a statement. Pullman is where Schweitzer is.
Yes.
We're building more stuff. Mm-hmm. We're continuously making our area larger and larger. But I just sort of wonder at what point will Schweitzer in the future say, you know what? Or, you know, maybe after Schweitzer moves on and the company goes into new hands, you know, at what point is the company going to look at it and say, you know, this is not the best place for the company. We could make more money going somewhere else. Look at what Boeing did. Boeing was based and built in Renton and Seattle, and all of a sudden they moved their headquarters to Chicago. They had different reasoning for it, but, you know, at what point does a major, major employer like Schweitzer pull out? And when in the 70s, Boeing was looking like they were going to more or less close up shop in Seattle, and they had the billboards with the last person leaving Seattle, please turn out the lights. You know, what is going to happen to the city of Pullman if that happens? Granted, we're not going to shrivel up and go away. We got the university. But that is such a huge employer that brings non-state jobs. I mean, everybody on WSU's campus is state employee. They're all paid by our taxes. You know, how big of a hurt is that going to be to the town if Schweitzer can't continue to grow and attract high-quality engineers to come to this town?
No, you're 100% right. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Ed Schweitzer, you know, he last year had a real campaign, or I should say earlier this year, not last year, earlier this year, had a real campaign where he was lobbying the Whitman County Commissioners and Pullman City Council, everybody, that, you know, we need more housing in Pullman. We need to have less restrictive zoning so that we can have more affordable housing. It's not even a question so much that there's a lack of housing in Pullman. There's a problem with a lack of affordable housing. You know, housing in Pullman for a variety of factors, the tax structure in Washington, the labor laws, things like that, regulations, the availability of land, you know, things like that all factor into the cost of homes. But for whatever reason, you know, housing in Pullman is considerably more expensive than it is in a big city like Spokane, which really doesn't make any sense to me, because people come here and they think, oh, we're going to be living in a small town. We should be able to afford a really nice house for a minimal amount of money. And they come here and it's like sticker shock when they go on a real estate tour and see what's available, and the same thing with the retail. You know, that's another thing. It's, you know, like, look at, you know, people, oh, it's just, you know, it's just 7 miles away to go to Walmart. Yeah, but, you know, how do that's not, you don't tell, when people come to live here, they don't want to, you know, they don't want to hear, well, you got to go to another town to do all your shopping. You know, well, it's close by. You go, well, Spokane's just 80 miles away. You know, there's a Target up there. You know, it's like, you know, people don't want to hear that when they come here. Look at the weather we're having right now. You know, we frequently have rough winters. The roads are slick and everything else. You know, the Moscow-Pullman Highway is not the safest highway in the world to drive on, especially in the wintertime. You know, do you want to have to be schlepping back and forth on that highway every day to do your shopping? Or do you want to just jump in your car and drive, you know, like a quarter of a mile to the closest store? So, you know, you can't just continue to have these old arguments of like, well, we're just going to continue to, you know, to shop in Moscow or shop in Spokane or shop in Lewiston. And, you know, that, you're right, it doesn't, you know, people in the Palouse maybe have gotten used, or Pullman have gotten used to that mindset, you know, like, well, we're just never going to have anything here in Pullman. But, you know, people that come from like real towns, you know, and other places that have retail that covers their needs, it's a real shock to them to come here. And I've heard it over and over and over and over again from people that I work with, you know, new to the area, just how dead Pullman is. There's just no place to shop. There's, you just, you know, you can't buy anything around here. It's just kind of remote. And it's just too bad, because, you know, you were talking about a great place to raise your family, and Pullman is. You know, I have three kids that I'm raising here now, and I love it. I would never think of moving anywhere else, because, you know, it's you feel safe here. There's a low crime rate. Our schools are, you know, a number one for being such a small town. We have like an excellent school system. You know, we're talking about athletics earlier, you know, fantastic athletics program for, you know, the size school that we have. So Pullman has so many amenities, but we're a little bit short in that one last, you know, area of like housing and retail that, you know, if we could just get that last little piece in place, you know, Pullman would really be a world-class small town. It would be one of the best small towns in the whole country, you know, in which to live. And again, that's why I just have a hard time comprehending a lot of people's opposition to you know, to something like a Walmart. It's like, you know, despite your personal preferences or ideologies, it's like, can't you just hold your nose long enough to, you know, don't go there if you don't want to, but, you know, for Pete's sake, let, you know, we need it so badly, you know, to get there. You know, the town is just really crying out for that, and you know, can't we just, you know, put our personal preferences aside and do, you know, we've often heard about the greater good. I think that's the greater good. Let's do that for the greater good. So
hopefully that will happen before Schweitzer ever gets to the point of saying, hey guys, you don't do something now, I have to go.
Yeah, I think I can't ever envision, you know, a scenario at this point. I mean, the Ed Schweitzer's commitment to Pullman has been, you know, absolute, you know,
it's been awesome
from day one, and he continues to, you know, we continue to build more buildings. I mean, obviously we're not planning on going anywhere anytime soon. We're spending millions more dollars to put in new buildings, and you know, we're even going to use some of our own land to try to encourage, you know, retail development and housing and things like that. You know, that was Ed's kind of, you know, token, you know, like, okay, if you guys won't do something about it, I'm going to try to do something about it. You know, we're going to build houses and things like that just so we can, you know, to recruit people. Because, I mean, that's ultimately it. You know, our capital, you know, is people. You know, that's ultimately the biggest resource that Schweitzer has, are the people. And we were talking earlier about innovation and things like that, and that's where it all comes from. And so, you know, we don't have the people, and we can't get the people here, then the business will suffer because of that. So
let's just hope that things start falling into place. And, you know, like we said earlier, we got this global economy. Things are changing. It's not the same way it was 50 years ago. Small town America, downtown America, is just, it's not what the people want anymore. We want faster, quicker ways of getting our shopping done and get on with other things we have to get going. We don't want to go downtown and spend 3 or 4, 5, 6 hours parking our vehicle and walking from store to store to store to store, looking for this, looking for that. We want one place, go there, park, shop, go home, be done with it.
You know, and I think downtowns can morph and evolve into something different and can still stay vital, you know, in a 21st century way. You know, we're not going to go back to the days of the 1940s and 50s, you know, where, you know, we had the little supermarkets downtown, and then we had one store for ladies' clothing and one store for men's clothing. And like you said, you have to walk all around town to do your shopping. And you know, there wasn't a great selection, and frankly, prices were high. And, you know, it was quaint. It may, you know, may be reminiscent of a Norman Rockwell painting, and that might be your idea of how you remembered America, or maybe you want America to be. But, you know, like you said, those days are long gone. But that doesn't mean that downtown can be bulldozed over and a big parking lot put in, because, you know, downtown Pullman is already kind of adapting to what I see the future of downtown Pullman being, which is, you know, a trendy arts center, you know, places with coffee shops and little boutique stores, and especially things, you know, things that you know, that people won't compete with Walmart or a big store like that, but, you know, they'll offer the types of things, the little funky type stores that students like and things. And, you know, you don't want your entire community to be like that, because it can't. You know, you can't have a whole retail structure built on you know, coffee shops and little boutique stores. But I think the merchants in downtown can certainly make a very, you know, nice living for themselves. You know, filling that little niche market, especially in a college town. And like I said, I think downtown Pullman is well on its way to you know, to evolving into that state. Because, you know, really what people don't you know, we always hear about, oh, you know, Walmart's going to destroy downtown Pullman. It's like, no, because any kind of, they forget that, you know, the Palouse Mall opened some 30 years ago. And believe me, I'm sure that had a very devastating effect on downtown Pullman and other stores in Pullman when the Palouse Mall went in. And then the Moscow Walmart opened in around 1990. So any kind of effects that downtown Pullman was going to feel from a retail standpoint, we've absorbed those decades ago. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you hear the comparison, you know, it's like if you survive the chemotherapy, then you're probably going to be okay. You know, we've downtown Pullman has like withstood the worst that can be thrown at it, and it survived. And so I think the businesses that have made it through the mall and the Walmart in Moscow, I think will end up being fine. I don't think there's anything that a Walmart in Pullman could do to hurt them any further.
And we've seen downtown being revitalized, growing, changing around. Development, construction, you know, the new pedestrian mall that was part of Pine Street is now, you know, Pine Street's been partially closed, and now we have, you know, that area right down there by, I believe it's the Taco Del Mar.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know,
there's going to be a beer garden there.
The walkway. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's there's going to be a lot of things that are going to be attractive for people to go down and do.
Sure.
But your typical go buy some groceries and, you know, go pick up your cat toys and, you know, kitty
right,
litter and whatever
right,
else,
whatever,
that's
yeah.
just not going to be done downtown.
No.
There's
mm-hmm.
going to be other things to do downtown that are different. And I think we're seeing the adaption already.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And you know, it's just, yeah, it doesn't, you know, it seems like with Walmart opponents, it has to be either Walmart or downtown. You know, their whole vision of things is like, well, we don't want to have any kind of big box stores at all because that represents, you know, sprawl and it's not sustainable and everything. So we want to have it all downtown. It's like, but, you know, that kind of exclusive vision of things, I don't think it's not realistic. I think we can have a vibrant downtown and we can still have big boxes. I think there's room for both, and I think you have to have both in a town like Pullman, or in any town really, but particularly in a town like Pullman. Because like you said, the big boxes, the big chain grocery stores, things like that, that's where people are going to go to do their bulk shopping. But it's nice to have downtown as an option for, you know, if you want to go on a date or there's a particular, you know, thing you're looking for, if you just want to go walking and do some people watching, you know, that's perfect for that. So I think there's room for everything.
Yes, there is. And we need to just get into the mindset that that's what we're going to do.
I agree.
So you have, we've talked politics quite a while, and let's talk a little bit about sports, if you don't mind.
That's fine with me. One of my favorite subjects.
All right. And we have Jerome Harrison, who has led the Cougars in a lot of categories this year, broken records. If you were at one of the last games, he broke the Cougar record for rushing yards. He broke the Pac-10 record for the most consecutive 100-yard games.
Yes.
He's just had an outstanding year. However, what's been going on with the poor man?
Well, you know, I guess to Jerome's credit, he is pretty much, I guess, would be considered a consensus All-American. Pretty much all the, you know, Sports Illustrated, the football writers, collegefootballnews.com, you know, all the different All-American teams, you know, Jerome is either first or second string on those teams. So he's one of the first consensus All-Americans that that WSU's had back since the days, I guess, of Mike Utley and Jason Hansen. You know, and I guess if I were Jerome, I might feel a little bit, you know, disappointed. You know, he was up for the Doak Walker and Walter Camp Awards, and Reggie Bush, you know, took those in addition to winning the Heisman. You know, I'd say in many ways it's been kind of bad timing for Jerome, because he's had to play in the shadow of Reggie Bush, you know, the other big running back in the Pac-10. And, you know, and then, of course, you know, playing for the Cougs the last couple seasons when we haven't gone to a bowl, and, you know, it's kind of labor and obscurity. I don't think there's been many, you know, not many of our games have been carried nationally. I think probably the only game this year that was carried nationally was the game we played against SC. And, you know, so a lot of people back east don't even, you know who Jerome is. And so I've been doing a little surfing, you know, to get look at some 2006 mock drafts and some scouting reports and things like that for the NFL next year. And I just don't think Jerome is getting the credit that, you know, he deserves. There's a lot of people that, you know, one website has Jerome as being overrated. You know, there's another some other sites that well, one site has the top 100 players and the only Coug on the list is Jason Hill, who comes in at number 48, and Jerome's not even on the list.
Yeah, there's not even. It's not even for sure that Hill's going to even be going.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't announced his intent yet. I guess the assumption is that he's going. But, you know, I don't think that's right. I think he's going to be a great back in the NFL. I mean, you look at, like, the last 2 years. I mean, if I'm an NFL scout, I'm looking at durability. You know, and Jerome, you know, he carried the Cougars. He carried the Cougar offense this last season. You know, got 1,900 yards, a lot of carries. You know, on a team that's not going bowling, which means that probably, you know, he was taking some hits down, and especially when you're playing teams, you know, that we played, like, that had really tough defenses. Like, I look at Oregon, you know, I look at SC, they got some awesome defenses. So he's been taking hits. He's durable, though. Can you think of one game in the last 2 years he missed due to injury or any kind of severe injury?
Man.
I can't think of any. I can't think of a game he missed where he was out because of an injury. You know, that was a big... I mean, I remember all the preseason scouting reports on the Cougs said that, you know, well, they have a great backfield, but it's only one man deep, and if, you know, that man ever gets hurt, you know, Harrison gets hurt, that they're in trouble. Well, he didn't get hurt over the season, and he racked up 1,900 yards. So, you know, I like the way he runs. I think he's got a great running style. I mean, personally, I look at Jerome Harrison, and I can... I see a little bit of Sean Alexander in him. You know, how Jerome, like, he just has this kind of, he's deceptively fast, how he gets outside and gets in behind his blockers and then finds the hole and explodes. And I've seen a lot of similarities between him and Alexander. Now, I think Alexander's a bigger, you know, physically. I think he's, like, a little bit taller and weighs more than Jerome does. But, you know, the Hawks have a tendency to grab Northwest Stars, mm-hmm. you know, when they draft. Like, I remember, well, of course, Marcus Trufant, you know, is a...
Michael Black.
Lindell. And then, what is it? I hate to mention the Huskies on Cougar Radio, but they took, what's his face, the quarterback...
Heward?
Yeah, Heward. They took Heward. I don't even know if he's with the Hawks anymore.
I don't think so.
But they had drafted him, too. So,
right.
You know, I don't know. If Jerome falls to the lower rounds, I could almost see the Hawks, like, snatching him up, you know, as a maybe, like, a lower round... draft pick, just because they know him. You know, the Seahawks scouts have probably had more opportunity to, you know, they've watched North or Fox Sports and seen some of the Cougs games and maybe have seen him. And I think it'd be a great fit because, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see with Alexander next year because his contract's up this year, you know, and he's making a run for MVP. And either the Hawks are going to have to back up the bank truck to his house and give him the contract he wants or going to have to let him go. But in any case, you know, he'll be... gosh, what, 29, I guess, next year. And, you know, and if we lock him up to a five-year contract, you know, we're saying, okay, Alexander's the future of our organization. But it'd be a little silly for the Hawks not to have somebody, you know, ready to go in the wings is maybe the next big back. So, I don't know. He might be a good fit with them. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with Jerome in the draft.
So, over the course of the season, as you well know, the Cougars lost very... very close games. I mean, many of them by a field goal. And when you look at the fact that we probably averaged 2 missed field goals a game,
yeah,
you know, that was, in a lot of ways, that could be argued as the difference in the season. And I would have to think that Jerome Harrison coming from, say, a 9-2, 9-3 team, 10-2, 10-3 team, would be a lot more attractive to a lot of people because we'd be getting the press than coming from a team that only won one Pac-10 game.
I agree. I think he'll be a steal for somebody. I don't think he's overrated. I think some team's going to get him maybe in like the, you know, fourth or fifth round, and I think he's just going to be a steal. I think he's just going to go to the NFL and be a big impact player. And you know, and it'll be real interesting to see how some of the other you know, some of our other seniors, well, in the case of Hill as a junior, but if he goes pro, it'll be interesting to see how they shake out in the draft too. I think Jason Hill, I think it'd be a good fit IT, and you know, he's one of those you know, game breaking type receivers, and so I think he could be a big impact player in the NFL. I think one of the most interesting selections this year is going to be with Will Dirtying.
Yeah, with the injuries that he's had over the last few years, teams are going to go, oh, he's injury prone.
Yep.
But you know, there's going to be a team that's going to take a risk on him lower down.
Sure. No, I'm going to be really interested to see what happens, you know, with Will. I think it's just too bad that, you know, his college career had to end, you know, the way that it did with all the injuries, because I think he could have, you know, he could have had an awesome career here. I mean, he did. I'm saying he could have done a lot more if he hadn't been hurt so much. And I do. I think you're right that a lot of teams are going to, you know, maybe pass him over, you know, because of his, you know, injury tendencies. But, you know, I mean, Dirtying could end up becoming another Brian Urlacher. You know, he just seems like that kind of guy in the NFL where he's just that, you know, guy up the middle that's just real dominating against the run. And so I wish Will well. I think he's been a great player. And, you know, I hope he does real well in the future. And, you know, another guy I think that'll get drafted, maybe just not get a lot of attention is Bosler. You know, I think Bosler would be a good, you know, there's punting is always very important, and we've kind of come to take it for granted because about the 3 years he's been a starter here, he's just been, you know, fantastic. And, you know, in the NFL, you know, it's always a game of field position, and good punters are, you know, can make or break a team or a kicker. Like we were talking about kickers, the Giants would certainly, the game they lost to the Seahawks, I think they would definitely tell you about how the special teams will kill you. But, yeah, I'll be interested to see what happens to Bosler, too, you know, because I think good punters are always in demand, and so...
I would almost think he'd go the way of Lindell, probably not get drafted.
You think he'll be free agent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He might get drafted.
I mean, he didn't get a lot of national accolades. I mean, he didn't get, like, the Ray Guy Award or anything like that, but, you know, I think... He's been playing long enough. At least, you know, Bosler played with front the last, you know, Cougar Bowl team, and so maybe a little bit more recognition than like Hill or Harrison. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see where he goes. Yeah, but you're right; he may end up as falling with a free agent with somebody. But I think he'll do real well too with the NFL. So.
And then I've heard a little bit of rumblings that M. Crystal Bruce is debating on the jump to pros.
Oh, really?
What are your thoughts about him going out as a junior and the season that he's had in so far?
Well, you know, we have a tradition of undersized linemen, defensive linemen. You know, I remember, Didi Achilano and Isaac Brown from a couple of years ago. Those guys were awesome. But and I think both of them ended up as like free agents on some NFL teams. I'm not sure if they're still playing, but you know, those are the kinds of guys who, like, if Chris O'Bruce goes pro, he'll end up being like a DeMarcus Ware, you know, from Troy, because DeMarcus Ware was he was like an outstanding defensive lineman, but he was just way too small to play lineman in the NFL. So they moved him to outside linebacker, and he's been doing fantastic. So I think that's what would happen with him, Christo. He's a little undersized maybe for an NFL defensive lineman, but you know, I think he's fast enough they could convert him into to like an outside linebacker, and I think he might do well at that. So it'll be interesting to see if he goes pro.
You know, I guess, you know, from My hopes is that he sticks around.
I mean,
we need him to stick around.
Sure.
You know, you look at what happened with Ryan Long goes out to the pros, and you know, he's not seeing any play time or anything.
No.
You know, and the thing is, I sort of wonder. It's, you know, the big argument is that, well, if you stay one more year, what happens if you get injured, and you know, then your whole entire chances of going pro or down the tubes and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, you know, what's the risk versus the payoff? And
sure.
I really wonder how high he would be drafted and if he would be better off sticking around another year, getting more play time, more strength, bigger, stronger, faster,
sure.
You know, and then, you know, coming out as a senior being, you know, a super stud. I really don't know which way he's leaning, if it was serious consideration or if it was just, you know, well, now it's the time to start thinking about it. Let's, you know, let's look at a lot
right.
of things. I know as far as Hill goes, there was an article where Doba was saying that, you know, Hill's a very good candidate to leave early. But, you know, obviously Doba is hoping that he'll stick around.
Sure.
And, you know, it's... Once again, looking at Ryan Long, you know, he left early, and you know, he's not really doing much in the NFL right now. You know, maybe if he'd stuck around one more year, got more strength, you know, larger and everything, maybe he'd be, you know, ready to go out the gates quicker than somebody leaving as a junior.
No, I agree. I've always thought that Ryan leaving a year early was probably, you know, a really bad idea for him to do. I think if he had stayed, especially remember the defense that we had the year after that Long left. You know, I think that, if I remember correctly, the year after Long left was the year we had the Holiday Bowl team that had all the really good defensive guys, you know, with like Trufant and, you know, Jason David. And I mean, he would have just been one more factor in that would have made us that much more awesome. And he may have gotten even more accolades because we had so much, you know, success in that season. But, you know, I understand the temptation for these guys because, you know, the NFL is a much faster game now than it used to be. It's a much more hard-hitting game now. And really, you know, players don't last much beyond 30, you know, these days. You know, like quarterbacks do, but like guys that are, you know, especially in positions where you get hit a lot, like on the line, or running back or something like that, you know, you don't really make it much past 30. So, you know, I guess I can't blame them if they figure, well, that's just one more year I can be getting paid, you know, versus, you know, I've only got X amount of playing time that I'm going to get paid. So, you know, one more year could make, you know, that, I mean, gosh, I don't know what the minimum salary in the NFL is, but it's a, you know, it's a fair chunk of change, you know, and even just one year of the minimum salary is a lot more than most people would ever see in probably 10 or 20 years of a regular job. So, you know, can't blame him for doing it, but boy, I sure would love to see Jason come back next year because with Brink back next year, and then with Bumpus even better than he was this year, probably, you know, getting better every year, and Bumpus and Hill, it's just going to be bombs away. You know, I think we're not going to have much of a defense next year probably, so I think, you know, Dobin needs to go back to those old Price playbooks back in the days when it was just the Fab Five, you know, with
McWashington.
With Ryan Leaf and the Fab Five, and just bombs away. You know, forget about defense. We should just call, you know, because I can't imagine our running game will be nearly as good next year as it was this year. So I think, you know, we're just going to be, you know, a typical pass-happy Cook team next year. And having Jason there as a big game-breaker that he is would be fantastic. So hope he stays, but I'll understand if he goes. So
very true. Now, what about the fact that, you know, you're talking the defense isn't going to be what it was last season. And, you know, last season if I had my way, they would have been a better defense last season even. I mean, you could argue some of those games, you know, last-minute drives the other team had, you know, making the big plays on the third and long situations that allowed them to keep drives alive and go down and score those final points in the, you know, the waning minutes of the game, which, you know, sort of put it out of reach. And, you know, it's sort of funny because, you know, 92, our team was, I mean, up until the 94 season, really, it didn't seem like we were ever really known for a defensive team. You know, the 94 comes in, we have the Palouse posse.
Right.
And, you know, lead the nation in defense, and, you know, the whole Shark Jaws thing starts. And, you know, then ever since then, we've always sort of prided ourselves that we, not only do we have good quarterbacks and, you know, a great passing game, we also have a strong defense. And it seems like the last season, really, you know, it's been good, but it's not been the great that we've expected.
Well, I think a lot of the problems we've had with our defense is, you know, Akey has a certain style of defense that he likes to play, and I'm not saying it's a bad style of defense. Like I said, I look back at the Holiday Bowl. I mean, that'll probably be, in my mind, the greatest Cougar game ever played. You know, when we just put a licking on a Texas team that should have just killed us. You know, and we were just, you know, Texas left that field bruised and battered, and all the credit for that has to go to Akey and his defense. You know, he loves that gambling style of defense where you blitz a lot. And it worked for many years because we had shut down corners. You know, we had Lamont Thompson. We had Marcus Trufant. You know, we had Jason David. All those guys are in the NFL now. We had, you know, those guys that could play corner with anybody. And like I said, shut down corner. And it frees you up to run a lot more blitzes and things. And I think this season we tried some of that and got toasted because we didn't have the kind of corners, you know, that we've had in the past. So we gave up too many big plays this year, too many big plays. And I think not having Will there really hurt because, you know, we didn't have that spark on defense that we've had in the past. I mean, I can just remember, you know, several Cougar games where in particular, I'm thinking of the Arizona game last year that we won by the miracle when they fumbled, you know, towards the end of the game. And you know, Will was a spark for that. You know, he was out there. He was a guy that, you know, he made things happen. He was flying around, hitting the ball, causing fumbles and interceptions. I mean, when he was in a game, you know, you felt like anything could happen. And I don't think we really had you know, someone like that on defense this year when he was hurt and not playing. So, I don't know. It'll be great if we could find someone, you know, to fill in his, you know, to take his, you know, place, and it'd be great if we could get some, you know, good corners in here. I mean, I think we got spoiled, you know, all those years that we had just, you know, one great corner after another, and safeties and everything else. So, we'll rebuild. I mean, hopefully Aiki can adjust the defense to match the personnel that he has. Like I say, with Doba, you know, I'm looking at the personnel I've got on offense. It's going to be like, well, bombs away, you know, because Brink, you know, he's a shooter, you know, and so I'd turn him loose next season and, you know, score a lot of touchdowns. And like I say, we may give up a lot of touchdowns, but if we end up scoring more than the other side, we'll win the game. So,
yeah, I guess that's the bottom line: score more than the other team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think we're going to go in thinking we're going to dominate anybody on defense. So let's. Yeah, you know, I think we proved this year our offense was explosive. Not all the time. I think the problem was we were inconsistent. But boy, when our offense was clicking this year,
oh yeah,
we were awesome. We could have stood up with the best teams in the country. I mean, look, we had two All-Americans on our offense. We had Jerome Harrison and Jason Hill. You know what? I mean, I look at some of the Coug teams in the past. It's like if we could only take take the defense from one year and match it with the offense from this year, we would have had maybe a national championship team.
Oh yeah. 97 offense, 94 defense, yeah. No doubt in my mind. That's national championship caliber right there. Now you have the one thing that it seemed to me that the big yards that people were getting against our defense, you know, I think a lot of it was because we did not have Will Durden in the middle.
I agree.
How many times did, you know, our offensive linemen, they're rushing, they're trying to get at the quarterback, you know, they're not getting to the quarterback as quickly as we might hope, or they're trying to get their way there. But as the play develops, the middle of the field was open so often. I think against Oregon State, or I'm trying to think, it was an early on game where their quarterback would all of a sudden he'd just take off running, and he'd get himself a lot of yards every single time.
Yeah, the quarterback draw has killed us the last two seasons, just killed us. And I think that's because Durden was hurt so much. You know, I think if he had been there, I mean, you know, like I said, having that big wild man from Okanagan in the middle, you know, like I said, just would fly around the ball. I think that would have made the quarterbacks think twice about, you know, running the draw up the middle, knowing they were going to take a big shot from number 51. But without him there, talking about the quarterback draw, gosh, I remember the Oregon game of 2004 when Kellen Clemens had, like, I think it was over 100 yards rushing that day, and I don't know how many touchdowns. You know, he was just killing us with the draw that day. You know, when they couldn't get anything else, we were shutting him down on the pass, then he would just, like, you know, tuck it in and run up the middle, and it just killed us over and over. And like you said, Oregon State must have seen the film on that and ran the same game plan, and that hurt us in that game too. So,
definitely a lot of hurt. And, hopefully, we'll come up with a solution to that problem, because, like you said, the last couple seasons, it's sort of been the same way. They've been exploiting that weakness. And, you know, we've had a couple guys there who, you know, they've had a lot of experience playing there, and hopefully they'll come out this season and they'll be, you know, they're battle tested. They're going to be ready, and maybe they'll take the place of, you know, what Durden was offering us.
Yeah, we're just waiting for the next Will Durden or, the next Marcus Trufant to step up, and you never know when that'll happen. You know, you can never tell in advance. I don't think Durden had a lot of buzz, you know, when he came in as a freshman before, you know, that he was going to be so good. So I'm hoping we have an undiscovered star out there. So
I hope so too. That would be great for the Cougs, and it'd be a lot of fun going to a game expecting a victory like we used to expect, and not hoping to pull it out at the end. I mean, those games must have caused a lot of gray hairs among the coaching staff this season. I'm sure it did, too. Well, Tom, I appreciate you coming in again.
Well, thanks for having me on the show.
No problem.
I enjoyed it, as always.
I had a lot of fun. This is the PES, the award-winning The PES, signing off. And hopefully we'll be seeing you next semester. I'll leave you with the favorite of the PES, the Reverend...